This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. We are apparently we have a stage two fascism problem. This, according to historian Robert Paxton, he's not a lefty or a righty, he's a historian. And he says the Metropolitan Republican Club's decision to invite the far-right Proud Boys to an event last week has crossed a dangerous line that puts America one step closer to embracing fascism. He said skinheads, for example, have become the functional equivalent of Hitler's SA and Mussolini's squadristi. And he said if important elements of the conservative elite begin to cultivate or even tolerate them as weapons against some internal enemies, such as immigrants or liberals, we are approaching stage two of fascism. The founder of the Proud Boys celebrated, he went to New York and acted out the assassination back in 1960 of the leader of the Japanese Socialist Party. He was doing a political debate on TV, and this young man came up and stabbed him and killed him on live television. And that is what these right-wingers acted out for the Republicans in New York. Something weird going on here. Is it time to admit that we have a serious right-wing, death cult problem in the United States? You know, whether it's Heather Heyer being murdered in Charlottesville during a right-wing march, or whether it's Dylann Roof murdering a number of people in the school. I mean, this goes all the way back to Tim McVeigh. Left-wing violence has pretty much not happened in the United States since the Weather Underground went away in 1969, 1970, 1971. But right-wing violence is exploding, literally hundreds of examples of it over the last 20 years. On the line with us is Dave Workman. He is the senior editor of the Second Amendment Foundation. SAF.org is the website. And you can tweet him at, is that HandGN? What? I can't quite read this. Dave, what's your Twitter handle?
It's H-A-N-D-G-N-R.
G-N-R. What's G-N-R?
Well, think it out for a second, Tom.
Hand gunner? Okay,
yeah,
I got it.
Now you're cooking.
Okay, so Dave, what am I missing here?
I think you're missing a lot. Frankly, I was listening to your comments about how left-wing violence has been non-existent. Apparently, you haven't been paying attention to what's going on in Portland, Oregon.
You're talking about the left-winger who got his skull fractured?
No, I'm talking about the way that the Antifa people have seemed to take over the streets.
You're talking about the Proud Boys who had a sniper position? This was just revealed yesterday. It wasn't actually, it was the Patriot Prayer Group, the other right-wing hate group here in Portland. They literally were setting up a sniper position on the top of the carport. I don't remember any left-wingers doing that.
I don't know that that's actually accurate.
It's in the news
you're
today.
You're talking about something that I'm not aware
our
of.
Our chief of police, Ted Wheeler, was talking about it yesterday.
Our
mayor.
Into a confrontation, and that's not going to end well for anybody. It doesn't matter whose politics we're talking about. If you want to pursue this, it looks to me as though the extremes on both sides seem to be dominating the news and dominating the conversation. When
the extremes on the right, though, seem to be killing people. Over 100, over 150 murders. We've more people, according to the FBI, and I just printed this out. I don't have it in front of me, but according to the FBI, now this is back in 2012. The FBI report indicated that roughly twice as many Americans have been murdered by right-wing assassins, essentially, by right-wingers, since 1990. Roughly twice as many, if you exclude 9/11, than have been murdered by Muslims or any other kind of terrorist. the major form of terrorism happening in the United States is right-wing terrorism. Whether it's the 2018 murder of Blaise Berman, the 2018 murder of Michonne Cooper Williams, the 2017 University of Maryland stabbing, the 2017 car attack, you know, that killed Heather Heyer, the 2017 Portland train attack, the 2017 stabbing of Timothy Kaufman. I mean, I've got a list here. It would take me an hour to read the damn list. These are all, you know, right-wingers, many of them using guns, by the way. We have, you know, we are 5% of the world, 4% of the world's population. We got 50% of the world's civilian guns in civilian hands, you know, which, of course, exacerbates the situation. What do you think we should do about this?
If somebody commits a crime with a firearm, I don't care where they are politically, they ought to be prosecuted for that.
Well, there's a consensus about that, and that's what we do.
About all these people that have been allegedly assassinated by right-wing extremists. Let's talk about all the people that get killed in Chicago every year.
That's not, these are not political killings, A, and B, you know, A, those are not political killings, which is what we're talking about. So, you know, you can throw out straw men all day long, but it's not going to work. And B, you know, the actual murder rate in Chicago, gun, you know, the violence is actually down. But that's neither here nor there. I'm talking about politically motivated violence. We have a right-wing terrorism problem in the United States. It is being fueled by right-wing hate radio and Fox News, and it's being approved of apparently by groups like yours, the Second Amendment Foundation, SAF.org. I don't get it, Dave.
Hold it, Tom. Wait a minute. Now that's not true, and you know it. The Second Amendment Foundation, the NRA, the Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear, none of those organizations condone the murder of another human being.
Then why are you debating this with me?
Excuse me?
What's your solution? What, you know, if as part of the right, what would your solution be to the problem that the right seems to have, that their people keep going out there and killing people?
Well, I'm not part of the right. I'm a journalist. I just cover this stuff, Tom. You want a solution? I provided you one early on. Prosecute people who commit crimes.
We're not doing that. Every one of these people that I just listed, who has engaged in violence on behalf of a right-wing political cause, was, to the best of my knowledge, prosecuted. I don't see that as an issue, so we're doing
that is an issue. What you want? You seem to be intent on blaming a whole bunch of people out there for the crimes committed by a handful of nuts.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that when you have, you know, essentially violent rhetoric, when you have othering rhetoric, when you have, you know, somebody like Donald Trump running around saying that Barack Obama couldn't be a U.S. citizen because he's black, essentially.
Well, you mean
know,
like Maxine Waters telling her people at a rally to go out and harass members of the Trump administration?
Yeah, go after the black woman. I don't see that Maxine Waters has encouraged anybody to violence.
Don't pull a race card on me. I'm going after a Democrat who said something.
No, this is Donald Trump's, you know, favorite thing is to pick on women and particular, you know, and it's a two-for-one when it's a black woman.
The one that
Maxine Waters is not stirring up left-wing violence. Nobody has stabbed anybody or shot anybody or put snipers on a roof because of anything that Maxine Waters did or say. This is not about Maxine Waters. I'm just, you know, asking out loud, Dave, is there any way that we could agree that there's or is this just intrinsic? Is this just the nature of right-wing ideology, that it is essentially authoritarian and paternalistic or patriarchal, and as a consequence of that, violence typically comes along with it. Is that the deal?
No, I don't think so.
Then why is it happening?
You think it is doesn't make it true.
Well, I'm asking you, why is it happening? Because if we could figure out why it's happening, we could do something about it.
Why do you think it's happening?
I think it's happening because right-wing ideology tends to be authoritarian. It tends to be top-down. It tends to be, you know, Heil Hitler. It tends to be sir, yes, sir. And that kind of an ideology typically justifies violence far more easily than left-wing ideology. You know, I'm forgetting his name, the professor from Berkeley. You know, he said basically that the conservative meme of how society should be structured is as an authoritarian family with a strict father, whereas the liberal meme of how society should be structured is as a family that functions, you know, cooperatively and collaboratively. And I see that difference in the politics. I see that difference in the behavior. And it concerns me that that strong father figure means, oh, he's got a gun. He's willing to kill somebody.
Well, you mentioned the Heil Hitler. You know, Hitler was a he started the Nazi Party, I guess, the National Socialist Party. That's hardly right wing, and I'm astounded.
You don't think that the Nazis were the right wingers of their day, or for that matter, that they're the right wingers of today? I mean, you know, they're rising again in Germany. They call themselves the right, the alt right, and the far right.
Well, they can call themselves whatever they want to. It's certainly not the behavior pattern that they seem to be exhibiting. And again, I bring you back to Portland, Oregon. The news footage that I've seen are these masked hooligans running people, trying to keep them from driving down the street, accosting them, terrorizing them, if you want to use that term. I don't see
what's the appropriate response then to the threat of violence.
Well, the appropriate response in a civilized society is to either arrest these people, and of course, if the police aren't there, you have to defend yourself, I suppose.
Yeah.
Are you against self-defense?
No, I'm not. I am concerned that we, you know. As a talk show host, I'm also concerned. You know, the only talk show host in America who has been assassinated in my lifetime was Dave, I think his name was Dave Berg. Alan Berg,
yeah,
that's right.
That.
Alan Berg out of Colorado.
Yeah, Alan Berg, yeah.
Yeah, back
right.
in the 70s. And he, you know, he was killed by a couple of skinheads because he'd been going off on the radio about right-wing violence. And so they came in and waited for him. We walked out of the studio. They shot him.
And were they arrested and prosecuted?
They were, but that that's a little late for Alan Berg.
Well, I know that, but say you're out walking to your car or you know walking to the bus stop or however you get around, and you're accosted by a bunch of people wearing masks. What are you going to do?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a very good question, and I don't even want to get into exploring that with regard to me personally. Thank you very much.
You know.
And I'm assuming you didn't mean that as a threat.
No, absolutely not. I'm just, you know, it's a question that I have to ask a lot of people, and
sure.
People ask me, what are you going to do? Well, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm guessing your answer is carry a concealed weapon. Dave Workman, the Second Amendment Foundation, SAF.org is the website, and the Twitter handle is HandGNR. Hey, Dave, thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So do we have, is this fascism or am I being alarmist? Do we have a right-wing violence problem in this country? What should we do about it if we do? And welcome back. Mike in Lomita, California. Hey, Mike, thanks for listening to KPFK. What's up?
Hey, Tom, to answer your question, we did not enter the second phase of fascism this week. It happened during the campaign in 2016 when we had a major candidate who said he would not accept the results of an election if it went against him and who talked about Second Amendment remedies if it did go against him. That's advocating assassination of your political opponent. That is straight from the Nazi playbook. And it happened way back then. And anyone who
voted hang on just a second. Wasn't the Second Amendment remedies a phrase that was used by? I thought that was used by the woman in Arizona. I'm forgetting her name. Who you know, the perennial right wing candidate who ultimately didn't win.
My memory is that Trump used that phrase.
Hmm. Okay.
And as a proud constituent and supporter of Maxine Waters, I want to reinforce that she never advocated violence against anyone.
Right.
What she was talking about was bracing Reichsführer Himmler, if you see him at a restaurant, and complaining about children being torn away from their parents.
Right. Right. Which is not violence. It's exercising your First Amendment rights.
It is petitioning for redress of a grievance.
Yeah. So, in your opinion, when was the first stage of fascism in the United States, Mike?
Oh, hard to place. I think it was back when I was young and they started talking about Nazism being socialism, being communism.
Yeah. I think it was in 1976. I think that when Lewis Powell was put on the Supreme Court in 72, after he wrote the Powell memo a year earlier, or actually it was just a few months earlier, and then in 76, he and the rest of the court ruled in the Buckley case that for the first time in the history of the United States, the Supreme Court took the position, ruled that money being given by wealthy people to elect or defeat a politician or to pass or not pass some sort of political action was free speech under the Constitution. And then 2 years later in the First National Bank versus Bilotti decision, Lewis Powell actually wrote the decision arguing that since a corporation doesn't have a physical mouth, if a corporation wants to participate in politics, exercise their First Amendment right as a person in the United States, that they would have to do it via money because they don't have a physical mouth. So those two decisions, Buckley and First National Bank in 76 and 78, became the basis of Citizens United. And all of that, you know, if you go back and look at the classic definition of fascism, the Merriam-Webster 1987 definition, it's the, you know, a belligerent foreign policy combined with the merger of state and corporate interests.
Right, and that basically was the promulgation of the theory of $1, one vote. And I would put it somewhere around Jude Wininsky's era when he advocating a position which was known by his advocates to be false to bring us to a different result than they would be able to sell if they were honest in the first place.
Yeah, it's almost complex and it's almost not. I mean, you know, it's just like these trends we've been seeing for so long and how they're shaking out. Mike, thanks a lot for the call. It's good talking to you, and thanks for listening to KPFK. We'll be right back. It is 21 minutes and a half past the hour. Stick around. Welcome back. This from Muggsy Rap Sheet. The Republican death cult, essentially, is what it's titled. Pro-war, pro-gun, pro-death penalty. Voted against denying guns to terrorists and the mentally ill. Sowing the seeds of racial hatred. Opposing food stamps for children. Opposing health care for the poor. Trying to close women's health care clinics. Opposing the peace deal with Iran, denying climate change, disagreeing with the Pope on matters of religion. Yes, the Republican Party has done that. Disagree with scientists on matters of science, blowing up the Middle East after starting an unnecessary war that has killed hundreds of thousands while injuring millions more, encouraging strip mining in the Canadian tar sands and drilling for oil in the Arctic Circle, opposing rebuilding our infrastructure to fix dangerous bridges and buildings, opposing basically anything to ensure a better future, all while pining for the second coming of Jesus. It seems to me like the modern Republican Party has become a death cult. Jesse Ventura, I worked with Jesse's son for years, and Jesse and I have had a few meals together, and he made this comment a couple of years back. He said, "You control our world." He's speaking to the 1%, essentially. In fact, it's titled "A Word to the 1%." You control our world. You've poisoned the air we breathe. You've contaminated the water we drink. You've copyrighted the food we eat. We fight in your wars. We die for your causes. We sacrifice our freedoms to protect you. You've liquidated our savings. You've destroyed our middle class. You've used our tax dollars to bail out your unending greed. We are slaves to your corporations, zombies to your airwaves, servants to your decadence. You've stolen our elections, assassinated our leaders, and abolished basic rights as human beings. You own our property. You've shipped away our jobs. You've shredded our unions. You've profited off of disaster, destabilized our currencies, raised our cost of living. You've monopolized our freedom, stripped away our education, and have almost extinguished our flame. We are hit. We are bleeding. But we ain't got time to bleed. We will bring the giants to their knees, and you will witness our revolution. Jesse Ventura. This is Senator Bernie Sanders. Yes, the system is rigged. Today, the top 1% owns 41.8% of the financial wealth of America. The bottom 60% owns all of 1.7%. In fact, the top 0.1% of Americans owns almost as much wealth as the bottom 90%. of the American people. Meanwhile, since 1978, the cost of college tuition has increased by 1,000%, 1,120% to be precise. Medical care has increased by, again, since 1978, the cost of medical care has increased by 601%. Since 1978, just before Reagan, the cost of food has increased 244%. The cost of housing has gone up 380%. But since 1978, the typical worker's wage has gone up 10%. And among minimum wage workers, those in the bottom half of the working scale, the typical pay has actually fallen by 5.5%. CEOs, however, have seen since 1978 an increase in their compensation of 937%. That's from the U.S. Labor Department and Bloomberg. I mean, you just kind of add all this stuff together, and it's this insane toxic brew where the right-wingers come into power. They, you know, in 1980 with the Reagan Revolution, and it really was a revolution, we have to acknowledge that. They completely change our tax structure to benefit the very, very rich. They go on a war against unions to destroy people's right to basically have a decent job. And now we're wondering why we have social problems?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
And an awful lot of these policies fell on the people who now are identifying as, you know, the hard right, because, hey, we've got to do something. Yeah. Welcome back. John Hartman here with you. Boy, there is so much going on. There's this incredible tweet. I just printed the, I don't know, maybe our printer has croaked. This is Donald Trump tweeted, federal judge throws out Stormy Daniels lawsuit versus Trump. Trump is entitled full legal fees. This is what Trump tweeted. He at Fox News, great. Now I can go after Horseface and her third-rate lawyer in the great state of Texas. She will confirm the letter she signed. She knows nothing about me. A total con. This is what Donald Trump said. Tweeted this morning. He called Stormy Daniels Horseface. So she replies, ladies and gentlemen, may I present your president. In addition to his shortcomings, he has demonstrated his incompetence, his hatred of women, and his lack of self-control on Twitter again. And perhaps a penchant for bestiality. Game on, Tiny. Yeah, game on, Tiny. What do you think? Jared in Downington, Pennsylvania. Hey, Jared, what's on your mind today?
Hello, Tom. I want to talk about the subject of fascism. Mm-hmm. I would say that, especially in the United States, the concept of fascism in the United States has, I would say, for the most part, we've always been a fascist country per se, in the sense of the extermination of Native Americans and the enslavement of African Americans. For those racial groups and categories, it was always a hard fascist state with no civil rights at all. In fact, I think there was Noam Chomsky who said if the U.S. Constitution was adopted today, the entire world would basically say it would be a return to Nazism and slavery. In fact, it would be horrific. I mean, the founders were very anti-democratic. That's why they put in the Supreme Court, Senate, the gerrymandering,
Electoral College,
all that stuff.
Yeah.
Exactly, and they knew what they were doing when they set this all up. Don't act like they were, you know.
All about protecting, you know, wealthy white men by and large.
Exactly, the oligarchy.
I'm kind of haunted by I think it was 1940. Yeah, I forget what year it was, but you know, Henry Wallace. This was during World War II. I think it was 41, but it might have been 43 but whatever year it was. Henry Wallace wrote this op-ed for the New York Times, and they asked him, you know, are there fascists in America? Who do we have to worry about? And it was while we were fighting Germany. And his reply was that, you know, the American Nazis are not the people we have to worry about. They're you know, he said the FBI has them under close watch. The people that we have to worry about are those who, you know, basically the corporatists, the ones who claim patriotism, wrap themselves in the flag, and then just, you know, wanna you know, peel away all the wealth in the country. And I need to find that op-ed and reread it one of these days on the air because it's such a good one. But Jared, your point is well taken. Thanks a lot for the call. Lewis in Salisbury, North Carolina, listening in our Pacific affiliate there. Hey, Lewis, what's up?
Yeah, how you doing, Tom?
Good.
You know, I was just listening to the caller, Dave, with the Second Amendment
right.
type. Oh, man, you know, it seems to me that a lot of people, like they forgot that the KKK, the Klansmen, how they displayed their outright when they went in this place of sanctuary and you know, assassinated 9 parishioners.
Yeah, we have a homegrown terrorist organization that is, you know, the American version of ISIS. It's called the Klan. And then and now there's all these ancillary groups that, you know, they don't call themselves the Klan, but they, you know, they're still marching down the street in Charlottesville saying, "You will not replace me," you know, with their tiki torches.
Now, what happened to World War II when America, white America and black, but white America and, with their allies and defeated Hitler? And all of a sudden now, all that life that we lost defeating Hitler, America going to allow neo-Nazis. And you know neo-Nazis really don't really care about the color. They just care about the complexion of your skin, if it's white or you're a Jew. So that means that all white people, knowing that blacks got to worry about the Klansmen, but all white people have to worry about neo-Nazi because they don't care the color of your skin. If you're a white America, like all the shootings, if you look at the school shootings, all white kids got swastikas all on the magazines, candy guns in, looking like, oh, I don't know, something out of KGB, whatever the case may be, but the white people need to get together and find out why this shooting is going on. It's because they're allowing their children to be transformed into neo-Nazis and using swastikas. Have we ever heard anything about the Las Vegas guy shooting? Was he affiliated with neo-Nazi? Because my understanding, he had an opportunity to shoot up a concert of blacks, but he chose to shoot up a concert of country white people.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but I do know it was reported in the media, you know, it was reported in the news fairly non-controversially, so, you know, it's pretty straightforward stuff, that he was a big consumer of right-wing conspiracy stuff and that he had
wow.
a lot of those books in his house and all that kind of stuff.
They didn't put that on the news. They were not. Now you get a lot of mass killing. They're going to hold that particular part out now because they know that once white America get the hang of what's going on, their children is in jeopardy, just like African American children is in jeopardy when we're dealing with the Klansmen or these off-right skinheads.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Thank you, Lewis. Bill in Knifley, Kentucky. Is that how it's said, Bill?
Knifley.
Knifley. Okay. What's up?
Yeah. Appreciate. Listen, I got a quick comment. I just want to tie what you're saying today about the elites trying to destroy our country and our situation with what you said yesterday about the them wanting us to live more so in the Gilded Age. I think you're being generous. I believe they want us to be live more so in a feudalistic society, going back several hundred years.
Yeah, no, yeah. I agree, and that's that. In fact, in my book Screwed, I lay this whole thing out that basically what's going on here is neo-feudalism, a new form of feudalism. And you know, in the old feudalism, you were literally owned by the lord or the baron or the king or the prince or whoever happened to own the land that you lived on. They literally owned you right down to the point of deciding that who could marry whom and, you know, all your property. They owned your clothes. They owned absolutely everything. You know, now they don't need to exercise control at that level. Instead, we do it through things like debt and, you know, raising the cost of housing, raising the cost of medicine, raising the cost of education while suppressing wages. And functionally, it's the same thing. You've got people who are living basically in terror of what, you know, the wealthy people can do to them economically. And then you wonder why people are rising up on the left, on the right, all over the place. I mean, you know, it's everybody.
Well, I don't wonder at all. I realize what's going on. I mean, I'm about your age. I retired a couple of years ago, and I realized that I could not live near a metro area, so I moved out to Niffley, which is 2 hours south of Louisville and 2.5 hours southwest of Lexington. Mm-hmm. So I'm out in the country, and I bought land so I could grow my own crops and graze some animals. So because I don't believe that this country has much left, you know, much time left.
Well, if we keep going down the road we're going down, Bill, I can't disagree with you.
Yeah, I'm not a prepper, but you know, I still look at some of their ideas and say, you know, these things are, you know, there's a possibility of terrible things happening.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Bill, thank you for your contribution to the conversation. Richard in Chicago. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Oh, hello. I was calling about, let me turn my radio down, the conversation about, you know, fascists, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, to me, it really boils down to the way Trump is handling these rallies, you know, throw people out, these, you know, beat them up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one's arrested there. There was a guy that... fellow was being escorted out and jumped out and hit him, and you know, they arrested the guy that was hit. You know, I think you're totally correct about the rise of people pointing guns at federal officers at the Bundy ranch and the militias. But I think I'd focus on his conduct and the people that are there. That he brings people up on the stage who beat people up. Mm. He brought up two guys. You know, I mean, what is, you know, how can that this fellow that you had on blame the left so much? I mean, these people are Antifa people are fighting back instead of having
trying to engage in self-defense at the very least.
Yeah, or at least standing there in front of them, having the courage to stand in front. We used to stand in front of the police during the Vietnam War protests. I mean, it's kind of the same thing. I mean, if you're no one's there, then no one knows there's any kind of resistance. So I don't know what I'm adding to the conversation, but I just think it really...
So your sense of it is that Trump's tone, the stuff that Trump does and says at the rallies is feeding this. It's the bottom line.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I absolutely agree. And it concerns me tremendously.
Ask him about it.
and it's one of the least discussed things in the media is, you know, how Donald Trump is inciting right-wing violence. Richard, thank you. Excellent point. It's 45 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with more of your calls and more of the news of the day right after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Is this just a hiccup in the road and everything's going to be cool? Or are we literally sliding into something that looks like a fascistic state? And welcome back. Tom in Yerington, Nevada. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind?
Well, first of all, I don't agree with either side. I think we got to meet in the middle because we're going to destroy this country if we can't work together. And as far as the Second Amendment,
well, hang on just a second,
there's
Tom.
A reason.
Can we talk about that for a second, Tom? So if you were in New York when these they call themselves Proud Boys, when they reenacted the murder of a Japanese socialist politician by way of political theater, like, hey, you know, here's how you murder a socialist politician at the same time that Donald Trump is out there talking about socialism is going to destroy this country. What would you do? What would you say to them? How do you make that happen?
I don't know. It's real hard to convince somebody with no brains what's right.
Well, I don't think these people are stupid. I think we dismiss them at our own peril. I think some of them are probably very smart. There's not necessarily a relationship between being smart and being moral or even being thoughtful.
Well, I guess that all my life I try to think about things and what's right and what's wrong and what's the best thing to do and what's going to profit me and what's going to profit my kids and what's going to profit my country and what's going to profit my city, county, and state. And I don't understand not thinking that way.
Yeah. So you want both sides to come together, but respectfully,
like to
Tom, it doesn't. I'm not hearing from you how that happens. I'll tell you right now, I don't have an answer. I think that
I don't have an answer either, but it is a goal to work towards, and we got to develop the answers.
Yeah.
You know, we can't have our nation divided, you know, and people in two camps. It's going to destroy us.
Well, I think, you know, our nation's been divided for most of its history in various ways, and the problem that we have right now is that we've got a president and a political party following him who are using that division as a political tool. And that's when it gets really, really dangerous. Tom, we just have a minute to the break. You said you wanted to mention something about the Second Amendment.
Yeah. I have a business, and I carry a concealed firearm when I'm carrying money.
Sure.
And I think that's my right.
Yeah, it is.
So
I have no problem with that.
To defend my money, yeah. To defend my property, that's part of the Constitution. I have the right to defend my property.
Sure. Sure. That's not literally what the Second Amendment says or why it was written, but you do have that right.
It was written to fight our government, to keep our government in line is why it was written.
No, it definitely was not. There was not even a discussion of that at the Constitutional Convention. You can go back and read James Madison's notes. The main debate around the Second Amendment was that it originally said, in order to maintain the status of a free country or the security of a free country.
In other words, it's to keep from our country from going offline and being able.
No, respectfully, no. That originally said free country. Patrick Henry, who was the largest slaveholder in the state of Virginia, objected because he was afraid that a national militia could demobilize the slave patrol in Virginia, which was the Virginia Militia. It was also known as the Slave Patrol. The same was true in the state of Georgia. And so in order to satisfy Patrick Henry, James Madison changed the language to provide for the security of a free state. Tom, thanks for the call. Welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour. Warren in Seattle. Hey, Warren, what's on your mind?
Yeah, Tom, I really appreciate your show. I watch it a lot. I watch Democracy Now. I'm a left-wing guy. I vote for Democrats.
I hear a butt coming.
Yes. I just wanted to bring up another issue that's kind of unique to me. When I was 20 years old, I was brutally beaten by two guys. And when I successfully sued them, later, in 1974, I got a gun permit to protect myself because they threatened me.
That's why we have concealed weapon permits. And, you know, I have no objection to the state issuing a license to carry a concealed weapon to people who have passed some sort of, you know, reasonable and relatively rigorous background check. I got no problem with that, Warren.
Okay, well, And then later,
I don't think anybody has a problem with that. The problem that we have is that we're awash in guns. We have half the world's civilian guns in this country. We're 4% of the world's population, and we have the highest rate of gun violence in the world. And it has nothing to do with concealed carry permits. It has to do with the fact that in most states, well, actually, in every state now, I believe, you can walk into a gun show and buy a gun with no, you know, if it's considered a, quote, private transaction, there's no background check, there's no waiting period, there's no nothing. And we allow weapons of war to be carried on the streets of America. And, you know, no other civilized country does that.
Which is crazy. And I support getting rid of assault weapons and background checks.
Yeah, just some rational gun control stuff. I mean, we had this for 10 years, and George W. Bush and the Republicans in 2005, when the assault weapons ban expired, and it had actually measurably reduced gun violence in the United States, they said, what the hell, we don't need to renew that. And all of a sudden, well, not all of a sudden, but, you know, now we're seeing more and more of these, particularly school shootings and mass murders that are being done with these kinds of weapons. So. Yeah. Warren, thank you for the call. I get it. You know, some people need to carry a concealed weapon. That's not the issue here. Don in Shoreline, Washington. Don, what's up?
I've done a little historical research, and
my lifetime. And I believe that fascism originated in the Roman Republic or the Roman Empire.
Sure, that's that's why Mussolini used the fasce as the logo, the bundle of sticks with a rope around it and an axe sticking out of the top of it, because right. that was the symbol of Roman power.
Yeah, so I guess you could say in a way that Republicans are fascists and fascists are Republicans.
Well, it's increasingly looking that way, and that's that's a big concern. Don, thank you. Well said. Tomas in Rockford, Illinois. Hey, Tomas, what's up?
Hey, what's up? To me, what I see the way things are going is they're going to turn, the Republicans are going to turn, and the oligarchs are going to turn this country into a third world country. And to me, the division that's going on, the Republican voters, the Republican people, I don't think they're the problem. The problem is the Republican politicians.
Yeah, well, at a certain level, Tomas, we all, but depending on the metric you're using, we're already a third world country. We have, 17% of us live in poverty. More than 50% of us can't sustain a $1,000 expense. In fact, more than 60% of us can't sustain a $1,000 expense. We've got infant mortality rate and a maternal mortality rate. Women dying in childbirth and pregnancy and children dying in their first 2 years of life. Those two death rates are right up there with third world countries. We are at the very, very bottom of the 34 OECD countries. So, we're right on the edge of the transition from being a fully developed country to being a third world country.
I just see things getting worse. And it's the Republicans and these oligarchs that are just making things worse. That's about all I got to say.
Yeah, well, I think you said it well. This multi-trillion dollar transfer of wealth since 1980 and Reaganism, took place, has brought us this. Bill in Portland. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Hi. The fascism is tied in with business. And when the Trump administration, they've been barring anybody involved with the cannabis industry coming in from Canada, on behalf of the pharmaceutical industry, the alcohol industry, and the tobacco industry, that's an example of the fascist dictatorship in action. Also, not allowing, only bad things are being for public announcements regarding the cannabis industry and cannabis, in general.
I don't see that as fascism, Bill. I see that as bad policy. And punitive and retributive, or however you pronounce that word, if it is even a word, and it's a reflection of Jeff Sessions, firm belief that pot is somehow associated with something. I don't know. Whether he's trying to fight the old Nixon drug wars, which was basically just an excuse to go after, to use Haldeman's phrase, hippies and blacks. Or whether it is, some deeply held belief that the pot really is a gateway drug, but he's wrong. I mean, I see that as just as bad policy.
The whole drug war has been promoted by the pharmaceutical industry, it goes back to.
You go back to the 20s, and the alcohol industry was in on it too.
Yeah, donations to legislations, against cannabis legalization and so forth, comes from the alcohol and pharmaceutical industries. But when Trump was in the UK also talking about fake news, why don't these news agencies sue the feds and Trump personally for slander and libel?
Because you can't sue a public figure for that. And, it's a very, very high bar. You have to prove that they intentionally knew that it was wrong, that they intentionally, specifically intended to cause a specific harm, and that, that context was illegal. It's almost impossible to do that lawsuit, Bill, but I get your sentiment. Thanks for the call.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.